The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bob Burney Live.
Looking at today's news through a biblical worldview.
And we continue broadcasting live from the Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield here for the big gala tonight for the Ridge Project. And I have another Tyro seated next to me. His name is Scott Berry. And tomorrow will mark 2 weeks since he's been out of prison. 2 weeks, Scott. That's all.
That's it.
2 weeks. And how long were you in prison?
10 years.
All right. And why were you in prison?
You really want to know? I was a drug addict. Been in and out of prison for a long time. And
so this last time was not your first time?
Not my first time.
Okay.
Being a drug addict, you tend to do a lot of stupid things.
Yeah.
And
I'm not a drug addict, and I do stupid things.
And this one was really stupid. I was involved with a woman, newly sober. I was newly sober. And, of course, I thought that everything was going to work out great because we were both getting sober. And when it didn't work out, you know, I fell back to what I knew, my comfort, which was drugs. And it drove me insane. Really drove me insane. And when things went south for me and she had another guy living in our house, I went to go pick up some tools. They were laughing at me. I wasn't feeling good about myself. And a voice told me that they had to pay for it. And my solution to sobriety was murder-suicide. And I went there after committing several crimes. I went there on a Sunday night, and I entered through the window with a knife and duct tape and some zip ties with every intention to go in and torture and kill these people and kill myself. For whatever reason, I was barefoot when I entered the house, and the floor was so cold that I had a moment of clarity. It was God. I know it was God. And I realized that it wasn't where I wanted to be. But
so
it was
wait
too
a minute.
Late.
You got cold feet.
I guess.
Sorry. I couldn't resist.
Yeah, so, and I bolted out of there, and not like the movies, there's no helicopters and stuff going on when they're on the 911 call. You couldn't tell me that, though, and I zipped out of there, and I ended up getting arrested the next day and went through a whole cycle of suicide attempts in jail and stuff like that. And then
so God literally saved you from doing something horrific.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, there's no other explanation.
Yeah.
Because when I couldn't do for me, what I couldn't do for myself, he did for me at that moment.
All right. So you go off to prison for 10 years.
Yep.
What was your spiritual condition, your relationship with God, when you went to prison 10 years ago?
I know that every time that I was about to do something stupid, that something stopped me. And every time I stopped making decisions for myself, because every decision I made was terrible. Mm-hmm. While I was newly incarcerated in the Lorain Correctional Facility, my victim, the guy, had gotten incarcerated. He's coming across the yard in a jumpsuit because they put him in protective custody. And I'm walking across the yard. He's got a guard on either side. And I told him, I said his name, and he looked at me, and I think he kind of panicked. And I was like, I don't care what you do. I'm going to find you, and I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah, yeah.
And the next day I went and I tried to get into the protective custody to let him know that I could get to him. I was on a maintenance crew, and I was able to get on the paint crew, and when they realized that, they kicked me out. But later that day, I was in my cell washing my hands, and there's a sink and a toilet and that stuff and this crummy mirror, and I see myself in the mirror, and I just started crying and realized that the one opportunity I had to start changing my life around, that everything I had blamed, because I had made an inventory of all the people I was going to harm that harmed me, and that at that moment I realized that the only person that hurt me was me, and that I wasted this opportunity to set my life right. And I made a way to get in touch with him through a letter, through someone else. And we later became friends, which is crazy. Maybe not, we're not maybe best friends that we'd hang out, but we were in talking. And I was able to make amends to him. And that changed everything for me going forward. I had to get mental health help, sobriety, work with my recovery program. Sure. And then I started taking every class I could get, until there wasn't any more to take. So then I started writing programs. I started teaching programs like Tyro, other green technology programs, things like that. And every time that I thought that I was doing enough, God would send another person in my life to tell me, hey, we need you to do this too. Hey, you're doing this. Uh-huh. And I didn't make my own decisions. They just I let guys that were doing the right thing push me in the right direction, and it kept me away from the guys that were doing the wrong thing.
How important has the Ridge Project and the Tyro program been to you personally?
Oh, you know what? I joined the Tyro Dad class to just get a certificate. There's a way you can get out of jail free, possibly by a judicial release and stuff. Yeah. And I wanted to pad my stats, and that was my intention. I went into a big room of a class. It was all day on Wednesdays for 10 weeks. I sat in the back corner, and I was just there just passing time. When you finished the session, they gave you an envelope, and the guy that was teaching the class said, don't take this and buy soups with it or gamble with it or whatever. Write your family. Well, the least I could do was write my family. So I have a daughter that I hadn't talked to. At this point, it's 2014. I hadn't talked to her since 2009 when I was incarcerated, because somebody took the front page of the paper and brought it on the bus, and she was embarrassed. At this point, I hadn't talked to her, but I've written her and sent her little gifts and stuff that I was building, and I started writing her. I wrote her in the morning. I wrote her in the afternoon. As I'm sitting in class, all of a sudden, the guy says something, and I start paying attention. So then I'm writing the letters after class because I'm paying attention to class. Then I'm into the class, and then it's over. And I'm like, oh, man, I felt great, but it was over. And there's a couple other things that were, classes that follow, but they're only for one day. Well, a week after I finish the class, I get this letter. Dear Scott, I've tried to write you 1,000 times. I guess I'm angry at you. I get your letters. I don't know how I feel. But, don't stop writing me. Hannah, my daughter.
This your daughter.
First letter I got, and it was obviously, again, God telling me that I was supposed to be part of Tyro.
Yeah.
And I went to a facilitator training. I signed up, and I became a facilitator. I worked with Jafet from the Ridge Project on a program called Tyro Toys. I did everything I could to stay involved in that program, and it changed everything for me. During that time, in that class, I said something really stupid. I said, if anybody ever hurt my daughter, I would kill them, and I know that I can do it. And again, I start crying. And it's because my whole life I had been treating other men's daughters and mothers and sisters and grandmothers terribly. And it just changed everything. And I went out there from that point forward to make sure that all these 10 years – meant something. All the tears my grandmother and mother and aunts and uncles and father and brothers, all the loss had to mean something.
Yeah.
So I can't make up to the woman that every time I'm sure a branch hits the roof of their house, they jump out of bed thinking that it's me jumping through the window. I can't, there's no way for me to physically make amends to them. So I tried to just put guys out of prison the best I could, with all the tools they had, to make sure that if they moved next to my daughter, they moved next to my victim, that they had a chance.
Yeah.
And that was my goal. And I love it. I loved every minute. I taught Tyro Dad till the Tuesday night before I left on Wednesday morning.
And so now Scott Barry is out of prison, new life, new focus, Jesus is Savior, a whole new future ahead of you. And the Ridge Project in Tyro was a huge part of that.
Yeah.
Well, praise God. It is such an honor to meet you, Scott. Well,
thank you.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to ask my listeners to pray for you. We have thousands of people all over the state of Ohio listening right now, and I'm going to ask them to pray for you. Just 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. You got a lot ahead of you, a lot of temptations that are going to come your way as well, and we're going to pray for you.
Thank you.
All right. Scott Barry, a Tyro with the Ridge Project. We're going to step aside, take the last break of the hour. We'll be back and finish things up here at the Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield.
Talk radio that makes a difference. Makes a difference. This is Bob Burney Live.
Well, we are wrapping things up here at the Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield. And in about 10 minutes, we will begin the big gala for the Ridge Project upstairs here at the Reformatory. But I have one more guest, and we have saved the best till the last.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that.
Brandon Tiarina is one of the two sons of Ron and Kathy Tiarina, the co-founders of the Ridge Project. And Brandon, it is great to see you again.
It is great
to have
you
on the program. This is like an annual event.
It is every other year.
We get to hang out. Yeah, we make radio history. Yeah. How long have you been involved with the Ridge Project?
I just celebrated my seventh year in March.
Seventh year in March.
Yep.
Now, I guess the obvious question is your mom and dad founded it, but that doesn't mean that the kids actually become involved. In fact, a lot of times we see exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
So why are you passionate about the Ridge Project?
Well, naturally for me, growing up with my dad, being in prison, I know what that feels like, and I can speak into the experience that the kids are having, and I'm super passionate to the dads out there, because I have two girls of my own, and so it's like, you know, what you're doing to your kids, a lot of the guys know what that feels like, because their parents were locked up, and so I kind of like get to go in there and bring those emotions back up to the forefront of their minds, right? So where they can remember what that felt like and then realize, oh my goodness, this is what I'm doing to my kids, and I know what it feels like.
Yeah.
And so that's my big passion, is to turn their hearts back towards their kids and not have them so focused on themselves, and really be the dad that they should be and that they're called to be.
Brandon, how big a miracle is it that your entire family is living for God today?
Yeah, that's a huge miracle. Back when my dad, when my dad came out the first time, so my dad spent 11 and a half years incarcerated, and then
were you bitter at your dad? Even though he was innocent, were you bitter at him?
Because I was extremely bitter when he went back, because after the 11 and a half years, when he came out and the Court of Appeals overturned his release, and he had a week to report back into prison 6 months after his release. And so he went back for 4.5 years. And at that moment, I wanted nothing to do with him. You know, the pain, whenever I really thought about it, and it's like the pain was just too much. So I was like, okay, I'm going to be numb to it, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do everything that I can to distract me. And I really even found myself having like a super just like a mask, a facade of relationship with God. You know, I was on the
worship team. I was going to say, bitter at God?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, one of the things that I learned from that was it's like God's big enough to handle my anger. And, yeah. But, yeah, we, I was the drummer on the worship team, and I was the guy that was always laughing, kind of the class clown type deal. Mm-hmm. And but in the inside, I was just broken. I was hurt, and I was extremely mad. And but I didn't want anybody to see that. Right. Mm-hmm. I wanted everybody to think like, oh, he's got it under control. This dude is legit. He's got the good life, all those type of things. You
the
know?
Mask.
The mask, for sure. Yeah, and yeah. But then I would go home, lay in bed, and then everything kind of just hit me. Every single night, it was just like I have to try and turn my brain off because it would always revert to, you know, you're in pain, you're hurting.
How long before God broke through the bitterness and the anger?
I was about to be 20. Or maybe I was 20. I remember. So my dad got re-released in 2000 and when was that? 2008 or something like that. 2006 maybe. But I was 17, so I just turned 18, and so I didn't want anything with my dad. I was just
so wait. So
like,
you were bitter the whole 4.5 years that he was back in.
Oh yeah.
But then even after he got out.
Yeah. Yep. When he got out, because when he went back in, our visits, we spent a couple weeks, or no, it was maybe a couple months, where he was being reprocessed, and so we had to do the whole glass visit.
Oh yeah.
And that really broke me because it was like every single visit, you're not allowed to touch your dad. You can't give him a hug. You can't do any of that. You're looking through glass on the phone, and you had to hold the phone because you couldn't hear anything that was being said. And so if you don't have the phone, then you're not even really at the visit. And that was the moment that I just like was completely crushed. And then when we actually got to have.
And we've got 1 minute. I'm so
sorry.
Oh,
no, you're fine.
But
we're running
out of time.
Yeah. So, you know, but what happened was after that, I called my dad up after one night of just being like super upset. And I called him up and I was like, hey, can you talk? Let's get breakfast. And we ended up getting breakfast. And then that kind of fostered the relationship where we're at now. And we're still navigating things like every parent should. And
yeah.
I mean, there's still a lot of hurt after the 15 years. And so we're still figuring that.
Thank you for your honesty
out,
on
yeah.
that. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's theridgeproject.com. Theridgeproject.com. Folks, you need to learn more about this ministry. It's incredible what they're doing. Theridgeproject.com. Brandon Tiarina, thanks so much. And all of our listeners, thank you for joining me. Have a wonderful evening, but please remember whose you are.
Listen.
Listen.
Think.
Think.
Discern.
Discern.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.